Having trouble achieving success in your professional life, happiness in your personal life? Could it be because you're not self-aware? 95% of us think we really know ourselves, that we're self-aware, when in reality, 10 to 15% of us are self-aware. That's a big gap. And my guest today on Which Way Is Life is Tasha Urich, and she's going to share secrets, techniques, and strategies to help you become more self-aware to improve your work performance, career satisfaction, relationships, and more. This is your podcast for health and inspiration, Which Way Is Life. I'm your host, Bill Klaproth, and this is episode 61. My guest today is Dr. Tasha Urich, an organizational psychologist, researcher, and New York Times bestselling author of Bankable Leadership. Dr. Urich has contributed to Entrepreneur, CNBC.com, and the Huffington Post, and has been featured in outlets such as Forbes, Fast Company, and Inc. And she's out with a brand new book, Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think, and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Tasha, thank you for joining me today. I like to start the show with the one thing. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, great. Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
In the context of self-awareness, which we'll talk about today, one thing someone can do today is to ask someone they love what they love about them, and to get some positive feedback that sometimes we don't always take the time to give or receive.
That's really interesting. I bet most of us have never, ever asked anyone close to us what they love about us. Is that the right phrase? Question?
It's exactly right. And the research supports it too. So it's not just what we notice. It's scientifically reported. And another question would be, if you have a friend, why are you friends with me? It's a question we almost never talk about, but can be so powerful.
Wow, that's really interesting. And what do we do with the answer then?
That's a good thing. Sometimes we already know the answer and we're getting verification. But if we learn something that surprises us, it's worth it to think about, how might I build on this? If this is a strength I didn't know I have, or a behavior I didn't know I was doing, how can I do more of it?
So that's that whole thing about being self-aware. And you say most of us aren't self-aware. So by asking that question, someone may say something and we in our minds go, well, I didn't really think that about myself.
That's it. I recently did that exercise with one of my best friends, and her answer to me was, one of the reasons I'm friends with you is you're brave. And I had just always seen myself as a pretty low risk taker. And so I was so confused that I had to ask her for a couple of examples. And sure enough, what I saw was just normal everyday behavior she saw as bravery. And it was such an interesting way to just see myself from another angle. And I felt great afterwards.
That is really interesting. And you're right. We're going to dive into this coming up. But first, if we could, I just want to dig into your story a little bit. If you could let us in on your personal life, what brings you joy when you're not saving the world?
Oh, so many things. I love to travel. I am an unapologetic theater nerd. I actually studied and have my BA in theater. But when I decided I wanted to have a real job and own a home and have health insurance, I went the psychology route, and I'm really happy I did.
Oh, very cool. You and my wife would get along. She works at a performing arts center. She loves the theater. And I quickly want to mention, Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Okay, Tasha, let's dig back into this again. So self-awareness, why is that so important, and why do so many of us lack it?
That's a big question straight off, and I think they're two important ones. So self-awareness at its very core is understanding who we are sort of internally. What do we value? What do we care about? What are our weaknesses and strengths? As well as understanding how other people see us and getting that feedback on how we're perceived. I have spent the last 3 years of my career pretty much diving deeply into this research on self-awareness. What do we already know, and what more do we need to find out? And I report the results in the book that we're talking about. But one of the most powerful and scary and motivating data points that I discovered was, according to my research, 95% of people think they're self-aware, but the real answer is closer to 10 to 15%. So what I always jokingly, but, you know, clearly say is 80% of us on a good day are lying to ourselves about whether we're lying to ourselves. Now, the reason we need to work at it is there are so many scientifically supported benefits of self-awareness. This is just a few, but people who know themselves and how they're seen, they're happier, they're more confident, they're more successful, they have better relationships, they're better parents, and interestingly, they even lead more profitable companies. And that's literally just a couple of examples of literally dozens of why it's worth doing the work to get there.
So those are really good benefits that you just listed off. So people are more confident, people have better relationships, people are better parents, people are happier when they really are self-aware. So what are the steps to becoming self-aware? Because the statistics you just said to us, 95% of us think we know ourselves, but only 10 to 15% do. So how do we learn more about ourselves and how do we become more self-aware?
The first and I think most important step that very few people take is to make the decision to be what I call braver but wiser. And if I back up, in these 3 years I've spent studying this topic, one thing I did was I looked far and wide and found people who had started off as unself-aware in their lives and made these dramatic transformational improvements in their self-awareness. And what I learned from each and every one of them is that they basically wake up every day, and obviously they've got a million things to do, and their self-awareness isn't their first thought, but they have figured out a way to incorporate that into their daily lives and their habits. So the decision to say, I am going to take a closer look at myself. I'm going to question some of the assumptions I might have been making about who I am and how I've seen. And then probably equally importantly, I'm going to try to see and understand how other people see me a little bit more than I have. Taking that step is really the essential commitment that we have to make. And it's amazing to me how few people actually make it.
So when you say question myself, so we get up and, okay, today I'm going to question myself and my beliefs. How do we do that? Just through normal everyday, you know, work or life or people we interact with? How do we question ourselves?
Here's what's really interesting. Our research busted a lot of myths about what people commonly accept as, you know, really easy ways to improve our self-awareness. And one of the things people often do if they say, I'm going to question myself, is they ask why. You know, if I get in a fight with my coworker, why did this happen? Or, you know, why am I so argumentative as a person? And we disappear into the depths of our inner self and we try to find these answers. P.S. That's also what a lot of therapy is designed to do. But strangely, the research on this shows that people who spend endless amounts of time in self-reflection and self-analysis, not only do they tend to not be more self-aware, they actually tend to be less self-aware than the average person. And the first time I learned that, I was floored, and I thought I had done my analyses wrong, and sure enough, it was a finding that had been repeated. And basically, what I take away from this, and what people can take away to do it correctly, is it's impossible for us to discover the essential truths of who we are, you know, to dive back into our past or to ask, why am I this way? But what highly self-aware people do is they ask sort of forward-reaching, goal-related questions. So if I get in a fight with my coworker, a better question to you know, question my assumptions about myself might be, what did I do to contribute to this situation? Or what am I going to do the next time I see this person? Or what do I want for my relationship with them? And this is literally one of dozens and dozens of tools I talk about in the book, but I think it's important to understand how many myths there are and how people with great intentions of self-improvement can often go wrong without even realizing it.
So we should ask why, and as you put it, ask forward-reaching questions that are goal-related. So in everyday interactions, even like, why I'm driving now and I'm feeling road rage, why is this upsetting me so much? Or it's a beautiful day out and things are going well, but you find yourself sighing like, why am I doing that? I mean, so we just question everything we do in trying to understand better.
I would slightly amend that, because the why question is what gets us in trouble. That's what the research shows over and over. So the more we can ask what questions, the more concrete and future focused, you know, so the road rage happens. Sometimes even just asking, what am I feeling right now? I'm feeling incredible road rage. What can I do to calm myself down? Maybe I'll listen to my, you know, in my case, it's the Broadway musical satellite channel, you know, so the why question doesn't really help us that much, which is one of the biggest myths of self-awareness.
Okay. So ask the what question.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. So we ask the what question. So should we do this for a period of days or start writing down our answers? What do we do with this information once we ask the what question, or do we jot the answers down?
I think different people have different things that work for them. And the commonality that I found with these highly self-aware people was that they did something pretty much every day. But one thing that is even easier than feeling like we've got to write down every insight might even be to do what I call the daily check-in, which is at the end of the day, asking ourselves, you know, whether we're driving home from work or we're just climbing into bed, to say, what went well today? What didn't go as well as I wanted to, and what did I learn that I could do differently tomorrow? And something as simple as that, that takes 5 minutes or less, whether or not we write down the answers, can be really powerful over time in terms of what it teaches us about ourselves.
So at the end of the day, what went well today, what didn't go so well today, and what if there's not a lot that didn't go well? What do you do then?
That's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think people who you want to look at how many days in a row things are going well or poorly. You know, if you notice, for example, that every weekday I have a list of 10 things that went poorly, and every weekend I'm pretty much happy with life. That's data for you to say, am I really in the job that I want to be in? Is it really fulfilling me and making me happier? And I believe that everyone can find that job in some way. And so it's a matter of even looking for patterns between days that can tell us a lot.
So back to that kind of that what question again. What is it that's making me feel this way? The last 5 days, I've felt very unsatisfied. What is it? And that can help you drill down on the problem then, or the issue, or you can try to diagnose it to figure it out.
Exactly. I love your question, because you're looking for themes. That's one of the ways that we can gain a lot of insight. So instead of going deep and doing all that psychological excavation, if we take a work week and say, during these 5 days, what were my high points and what were my low points, and what themes can I find in both? Looking at those patterns in kind of a bigger, broader sense is something that most people don't do, but it's actually one of the things that can be most effective in giving us that internal self-awareness.
So then once we do that, and say we do figure out a thread or a seam or a pattern, what do we do about it then? I mean, that's obviously subjective to each person, but do you have any tips for that?
It's tough, because it really depends on what the issue is. But I think anytime we get an insight, whether it's an internal insight from this type of reflection or somebody gives us surprising feedback, we have to decide what to do with it. There, somebody, for example, might not be especially happy in their job, but they, you know, they're planning to go back to graduate school next year. And so they know they can go through a year of misery because there's an ending point. But someone else might say, I really want to find a career that I love and a company that I love, and so I might want to do something to change it. But the important point, and I'm glad you brought this up, is we're in charge. And a lot of people talk about self-awareness of, you know, it's scary to know myself, and, you know, it does take courage, but ultimately it gives us so much more power to control our destiny, both professionally and personally. And for me, it's, why wouldn't we do that work to learn and have those choices?
Well, you never really think about self-help as self-awareness, because when I asked you what's the one thing someone can do to improve their life today, your answer was ask somebody why they love you. And I've never done that. So that self-awareness never comes to the forefront when you're talking about self-help or self-improvement. So this is really interesting what you're talking about, Tasha.
Right, and just to add on to what you said, because it is at the root of so many of the skills that make us successful professionally and personally, things like communication, collaboration, negotiation, influence. If we're not self-aware, we literally can't do those things. And for that reason, I often call it the meta skill of the 21st century. And by that, I mean it's the underlying skill and ability that makes us be able to do so many more things. So I really think people who spend time and energy working on this have such a unique edge. It's really incredible.
The meta skill of the 21st century. I like it. I like it a lot.
Catchy, right? Yeah.
It's catchy. So what is it that self-aware people, I'm trying to drill down a little bit more on it. What is it that self-aware people do differently than everyone else?
Let me give you one example that I find fascinating. So in talking to these and studying these highly self-aware people, I thought that when I asked them about getting feedback, you know, that being an essential part of self-awareness, I thought they would say, oh, I get feedback from everybody, my boss, my employees, the person behind me in the grocery store and the checkout line. And what I was really surprised to hear was how incredibly picky these people were about not just who they asked for feedback from, but who they listened to, even when they got unsolicited feedback. And so I want to give your listeners maybe two criteria to follow that hopefully isn't just going to help them learn more about themselves and how they're seen, but it's going to make it a more positive process, right? We never want self-awareness to tear us down, and it should be something that we use to accept ourselves and improve ourselves. So the two criteria they shared with me of somebody they picked to seek feedback from. Number one is the other person had to truly support their success. And we know that, especially professionally, some of our superficial relationships with people can have a lot more going on deep down. And so the people, even that we spend the most time with at work, might not fit that criteria. Every once in a while, you know, you'll know someone peripherally who seems to have your best interests at heart even more than some of the people that are closest to you. So that's one. The second was people who would be completely honest with them. And this is another example where the people who are closest to us aren't always the best people to do that. In the book, I give the example of my mother. God love her. She, no matter if I wanted feedback on my book and I sent it to her, no matter what it said, she would say it was the best thing she'd ever read, right? So she checks the first criteria, but the second criteria is lacking.
And that's so, a mother's job, right?
It is. I mean,
to
it's
accept
the best
and
thing
love
ever.
Unconditionally, right?
And I hope everybody has that person in their lives. But the important part, and what I learned from these folks, is they're not going to be the best people to ask for feedback from. And so what I call it is a loving critic, someone who loves you and is going to be honest with you. And to make it less scary, you know, if you have one or two people that see you regularly that you can powwow with, sometimes, honestly, that's enough. It's not a matter of asking every single person we've ever met to dissect our behavior. That would be horrible. So what I recommend is that people just get really clear and really strategic and start asking a couple of those people sort of how they're seen.
So who would be a good candidate to be the loving critic in someone's life?
Oh, gosh, it could be anyone. I talk about an example of a executive that I coached in my book. I called her Kim. And Kim had gotten some feedback just sort of at a high level from her boss that she was aggressive and acerbic in meetings. And she didn't understand this feedback, and she needed to get sort of more real-time data about what exactly was she doing. And oddly, like I said earlier, the people that she spent the most time with, she didn't feel like they checked both of those boxes. So she picked two people. One of them was a peer to her that she saw pretty frequently in meetings. And another was one of her employees who she knew they just had a very positive, honest relationship. So it's interesting because it could really be anyone, we always have to ask ourselves, do they have enough exposure to the behavior I want to learn more about? Obviously, Kim, you know, she can't ask her family how she shows up in meetings unless she brings them along, which might be career limiting. So it's thinking about the context and then not assuming that the people that we see the most or that we're closest to are always going to be the right fit.
So I love all of this, but I'm thinking as I hear you talk, okay, this is important, and I think we all should do this, as you called it, hey, people that do this have an edge. But how do you start the conversation? It seems awkward. I thinking of a couple people I could ask, but how do you start the conversation? Hey, I want to ask you, what do you think of me? So how do we get into this conversation with our loving critic?
It's so important to ask. So just a couple of things. In my book, I talk about a process that I call the right feedback. And you've got to ask the right people, which we've talked about, the right questions, using the right process. So let me briefly cover those second two pieces because I think they're just as important. So the right questions, you want to be as specific as you can possibly be. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say I call three of my executive coaching clients and say, can you give me some feedback on how I'm doing? There's going to be silence at the end of the line. And the reason is they don't know what's in the universe of what I want to know. They'll sit there and say, does she want to know if I think she's a snappy dresser or if she asks good questions during coaching sessions or, mm-hmm. you know, something else that I don't understand. So that's part of why it can be so awkward as we pose these insanely general questions like, you know, can you give me some feedback? People just have no idea what to do with that. So what I recommend for people is that they get really clear. Remember, forward-looking. So where do you want to be in your life, professionally and personally? Maybe you're a junior-level employee who wants to be a CEO someday. Take a second and deconstruct that and say, okay, if I'm a CEO, I need to do these things well. One of them might be communication. So maybe you ask a loving critic, and this is where we get to the process, can you spend the next week or two observing me in interactions and give me some feedback on how I'm communicating? And what I want to know is, what am I doing that's effective? And what are you seeing that you don't think might be as effective? And here's the beauty of this. So you give them this question up front. They're the right person because you've already checked that box. But then you're going to give them time to think about it and decide. That's a really important piece here because sometimes we just come and sort of give these drive-by requests. And just like you said, people don't know what to do with that. And they want to help. Usually, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll enthusiastically agree. And then the beauty of that, too, is they can actually get some specific observations. So they're not reaching back in their memory. They're saying, I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks paying attention to what this person is doing. So I think if you follow those three criteria, it becomes less scary and frankly, infinitely more helpful.
I love that. So that whole forward-looking question of thinking about where we want to go, and you're right, most people want to help. They really do. And if you come to somebody and sincerely say, hey, I'm trying to get here. Would you watch me for a couple of weeks and just take notes and just share it with me what you think? Most people are going to go, yeah, I want to help you get to where you want to go.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Okay. So before we get to the high five, I have one more question I just want to ask you. So you say in a world where we tweet at each other instead of listen to each other, where style trumps substance and where he who talks the loudest is most likely to be heard, it's easy to lose sight of who we really are and how others really see us. So here's the question. How do we survive and thrive in an increasingly delusional world?
The first thing is to ask ourselves that question and to take a minute and separate ourselves from the craziness that's surrounding us. Online and offline, you know, we're in this cultural moment where people post pictures of their breakfast and think that other people care about that. And we get sucked in. I call it the cult of self, right? The cult of self is trying to recruit every single person, not just in the U.S., but worldwide to join. So one way that people can sort of really specifically, practically apply that is to just ask the question, for the next 24 hours, when you're showing up on social media or when you're talking to people, how much time are you spending talking about yourself and how much time are you spending focused on others? And that seems counterintuitive, that people who are less self-focused will be more self-aware, but that's actually what we found. And so self-absorption is not the same thing as self-awareness. And the more self-absorbed we get, the more, you know, sort of deeply involved in the cult of self we become, the harder it becomes to see ourselves objectively. So one way we can fight that is to try to help ourselves even just notice if we're focused on ourselves, but ideally try to move the focus a little bit more to the people around us.
That's a great exercise. I really like that. Very good. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, coming up, we get the high five from Tasha Urich. But if I could ask a quick favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. I want people to walk away with something they've heard to improve their life, to make their life better. And I want you to do the things Tasha is talking about, because I think it's really, really important. So if you could do me a favor, go over to iTunes, search for my podcast, Which Way Is Life? Click on that. You'll see me. Hit the ratings and reviews tab and give me a rating and review. By that way, we gain a wider audience, and it gives us a chance to be heard by more people. And more people then will hear the great messages that we have on all of my podcasts, including this one with Tasha Urich. The High Five with Tasha is next. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And just for listening to Which Way Is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way Is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way Is Life for your free audio book. Time for the high five with my guest today, Tasha Urich. Tasha, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Question number one, what made you want to write this book?
The lack of self-awareness I see everywhere around me at work and in life, and my powerful and abiding belief that if we work on it, we can see powerful improvements in our lives.
All right. Question number two, can you tell me about someone that is very self-aware? What does that person look like?
Oh, sure. I'll just give a really concrete example. I talk in my book about Alan Mulally, who was the CEO of Ford, that essentially transformed the company from being on the brink of bankruptcy to one of the most record-setting years in Ford's history. And he did that in 5 years. And what I think is so important about that example is he believed that awareness, understanding himself, getting feedback, questioning his own assumptions, and doing the same thing with his team, telling each other the truth, being honest about the reality they were facing, and then even trusting people in the organization to know the truth and to speak the truth. I think that's the ultimate example of the power of self-awareness. It doesn't just transform us. It can transform the systems and the institutions that we're a part of.
Wow, that's a great answer and good advice for anybody running a business. When you work on yourself, it just seems like, and you're self-aware and you can pass that on to other people, all of a sudden you have a whole organization that's self-aware. Like you said, it's a secret weapon and it's an edge to get ahead. All right, question number three. Looking back, what advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, just to calm down. I've always been such a type A, you know, sometimes overly serious in professional settings, hyper-perfectionist. And one of the things I've learned as I've progressed, you know, the last 15 years of my career is the more personal and vulnerable and imperfect I am, the easier it is to help share my message. And I think it's something I still have to work on every day, but I'd really love to tell 22-year-old Tasha that.
And that's a much better way to live life.
Oh, so much easier.
Question number four, do you have a favorite quote you can share with us?
I do. So it's a Goethe quote, the German author. He says, whatever you do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. And I share that quote, A, because it's my all-time favorite thing probably anyone's ever said, but B, it applies so perfectly to our self-awareness journey. The decision to begin it, to be bold, to have bravery, that's where the magic starts to happen.
Begin it. I like it. Be bold, the bravery. Hey, if you don't start it, nothing's ever going to come of it. So you got to start it sometime. And we're going to put that quote up on the show notes page at RadioMD.com, so you can find it right there. Last question, number 5, finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
The most important thing I've learned is the things that are truly important don't always feel as important as they are when you need to remember it. And what I mean by that is I'm the kind of person who can get so sucked into work and to all the things on my to-do list, as I'm sure many of your listeners might sympathize. Mm-hmm. But the things that are truly important are our friends and our family and our loved ones and spending time nurturing those relationships and not getting caught up in all the craziness.
And that is the truth. That is the self-aware truth, darn it.
Hard-earned and constantly fought, but it is the truth, right?
Hard-earned truth. Well, Tasha, thank you so much for your time today. How can we connect with you?
One of the things I would put out there for your listeners, if they're intrigued by this conversation and they're interested in getting just a preliminary data point on their level of self-awareness, I have a free quiz. If you go to insight, the word insight-book.com, there is a free quiz that you can take where you can find your own level of self-awareness, and then you send it to someone who knows you well so you get their opinion as well.
Oh, that's really cool. Very good.
It is. We've been getting great feedback on it, so I encourage people to do it. It's really fun.
And we'll put a link to that on the show notes page at RadioMD.com. Also, we'll put a link to your website and all of your social media, too.
Sounds great. Thank you.
So once again, the book is Insight, Why We're Not as Self-Aware as We Think and How Seeing Ourselves Clearly Helps Us Succeed at Work and in Life. Tasha, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite quotes, which is, remember to enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Tasha, thank you again, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So fun talking to Tasha. My thanks again. Pretty cool stuff when you think about it. Self-improvement doesn't often involve self-awareness. And after listening to Tasha, probably should. So check that book out if you get a chance. And thank you so much for listening. Remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at RadioMD.com. And if I could ask a favor, please take 30 seconds and rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Just search Which Way Is Life on iTunes. I will pop right up there and you'll see the ratings and reviews tab. Just hit that. Give me a rating. Give me a review. And again, by doing that, we gain a wider audience, and it gives us a chance to help more people. Which Way Is Life is produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health podcast. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter and Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at RadioMD.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well. We'll be right back.